Hello, it is January 26th, 2016. You are looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 544 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on sports and earth. I am the aforementioned Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. I just recently, forgive the verbal misstep, I just recently stopped weeping after the complete beatdown that the Carolina Panthers put on my Arizona Cardinals. I had not anticipated. I picked the Arizona Cardinals to win. I had not anticipated Carson Palmer's brain being dislocated, which I think is what hurt him a lot more than the finger. So we have a Broncos-Panthers Super Bowl in 2 weeks. I will be there in Santa Clara. We will actually do a show from there. I'm not sure who my guest and or guests will be from there, but we'll do a show from there. But I wanted to kind of talk about the games that happened and preview a very cursory early preview of the Super Bowl with today's guest, Will Brinson. He is a senior writer for CBS Sports. He's been on the show before. If you're a longtime listener, you've heard him before. He is absolutely great. He is from the Carolina area. He knows Carolina very well, so he will rub this dirt in my wounds. As you listen to this, I will be on the air on a plane, hopefully, not just like careening through the air. To Des Moines, Iowa. I will be in Iowa this week covering the Iowa caucuses for Bloomberg Politics. And then I will fly from there to Santa Clara and San Francisco for Super Bowl L. So anyway, so those are my travels. You're updated now. Please get it in your planner. Anyway, here's Brinson. All right, first off, I'm not ready. Thank you for coming on, by the way.
Of course, always.
I'm not quite ready to talk Arizona Carolina yet.
Understandable.
So we're gonna talk first New England Denver. I want to do like a short little wrap up of each of the games on Sunday, and then we'll, you know, you'll be at the Super Bowl, I'll be at the Super Bowl. We'll have that. I don't want to. People are going to get so exhausted by the Super Bowl stuff. I don't want to. Part of me wants to be like, yeah, well, we'll exhaust them first.
Well, they sound I'm supposed to do a storyline story for tomorrow, and they all sound exciting now. But yeah, by Wednesday of this week,
seriously,
everybody, you're like, you know what? I can't handle Peyton, Cam, future, past, present anymore, please.
No, it's funny, though, because I still feel like if we survived the two Harbaughs, We can survive anything if we survive that.
That was everything in that Super Bowl. Yeah. Joe Flacco eliteness, Colin Kaepernick crossing, running and passing and other borders. Yeah.
It was so intense it blew out the power grid. So, all right. So let's talk that Patriots Broncos game in retrospect. And again, all of these things are very clear in retrospect, but in retrospect, have we just been underestimating the Denver defense all year?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, they're the number one defense in the league. And I think it's the storylines that have been elsewhere that have caused this, because I think this happens a lot in football and in sports too. But I mean, when we're too busy worrying about Peyton Manning versus Brock Osweiler, we quit thinking about the Broncos as a team that could do damage, and we quit thinking about the Broncos as a team that has the top defense in the league and that was the number one seed overall. And it was asinine for the Patriots to go into Denver with the Broncos having no chance to win that game. I mean, those are the moments in football to me when you have to do like, you have to call like a 20-second timeout and say, all right, if everybody's 100% sure that this is going to happen, then it's probably going to go the other way.
Yeah. And it's not that Manning was, cause we're still going to be talking about Manning in the Super Bowl, right. Either way, but and I will say it's hard to imagine a situation. I feel like the best thing Peyton Manning has going for him is he doesn't have to face the Denver pass rush.
Yes.
I feel like that would be particularly difficult for him. But how did you think he looked? Because it still feels like, you know, Carolina's pass rush is going to come after him. Did he look any better or any worse? It still felt like there were a bunch of throws he wasn't making.
Yeah, but I felt like there were some throws that he was making that he couldn't have made earlier in the year, like in the week 4 to 7 stretch where he was just a total wild card. I feel like And this, so when he went into the first game of the playoffs, I was like, all right, you know, he's had 2 weeks to rest. Maybe he'll, I thought he was going to look pretty good, admittedly. I mean, I was obviously wrong. He was a game manager against, in that opening game, against the Steelers. And then to see Peyton actually play well with just a week of rest gave me some pause when it comes to the Super Bowl, because I think I keep going back to that Packers game earlier in the year when everybody wrote him off and he had 2 weeks to prepare, and he didn't light him up on Sunday night, but he had his best game of the year and he looked like old Manning. And at this point, if you're Peyton, and I mean, let's assume that he's retiring, right? He has 60 minutes to go. And he says, this is everything for me. I'm going to leave it all on the field. I know I just have to go 60 minutes. I feel like there's some sort of finishing line relief there that you can kind of summon some extra adrenaline that you can't pull out in week 7.
Yeah, it's strange too, because I remember after that ugly game to end last year, and it looked like, you know, it looked like Fox was going to leave. It just felt like, okay, you should probably retire now.
So Pete Prisco is my colleague, Pete, yes, who yes. Everyone loves Pete on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Pete is actually, so he's been going to like Manning's Passing Academy for a long time. And so he has a decent relationship with Peyton. And after that game last year, he saw Peyton and Pete would, Pete's like the staunchest Peyton Manning defender out there. I mean, he's like doing like a shirtless Mick Jagger dance when Peyton's completing passes 20 yards down the field.
Who doesn't?
Right. I mean, well, but he wrote that he thought Peyton was going to walk away. I'm with you, Will. I thought he was done. I mean, it was over.
And as someone that, like, you know, I have no strong feelings about Peyton Manning either direction other than to think that he's obviously one of the best quarterbacks of all time and you don't want him to go out embarrassing himself, I found myself hoping he would, because it looked like the injuries were already starting to slow him down. And for most of this year, we've seen that. So it is sort of strange that now he has a chance, of all people, the guy that we've been all over him for years and years and years, about not winning from the beginning of his career, about for not sure. being a big playoff guy and not being Brady and not being other thing. He could end up having the Elway moment. Like, it's kind of amazing to think that 3 weeks ago he was relieving Osweiler, yeah, he could have the Elway moment.
He's the guy who, like, the joke started before he got to the pros because he couldn't win the national championship. T. Martin had
yeah,
to come
they needed
to
T. Martin. That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. And listen, don't get me wrong. I still feel like
T. Martin's great.
Yeah, I still believe that he's got an NFL career ahead of him. I still believe there's a chance. He just needs, as before, for Peyton to get out of the way.
And then, that's right. And he just T. Martin's one of the Brady six or whatever, right?
Yeah, right, right. So yes, exactly. But so the point is that, like, it's strange to see that come around. But on one end, you want to be like, yeah, well, you know, it's not really him doing it, it's the defense. But that's the way it usually works when someone walks away. Like, it's not like Elway won his last two Super Bowls on his own. Like,
no.
So, you know, it does feel – but it does feel like a switch of it, because he's on a different team. The PED stuff, whatever your thoughts about it, has been this weird, bizarre wrinkle in like that. Like, it's hard to think of any time –
I'm contractually obligated to never speak about it. No,
of course. So you have Nance's agent. You didn't laugh at that. You didn't laugh at that. Don't worry.
It's because I've got an electric, like, cow prodder shocking me. No, I mean, I actually wrote the story about it whenever it broke. But if Peyton Manning was using anything, wouldn't he be better?
I think the idea is that he's upright.
Right, like, I guess upright. That's true.
I think that's the idea. Is that's when all of these guys? I think I'm not acute. I've written about that piece, and I found actually the Al Jazeera story pretty shaky, to be entirely honest, and not because Al Jazeera is a shaky network. They're not. Huh. It's a really before they shut down anyway. The Al Jazeera America shutting down anyway. I thought that I feel like they generally did good work, and thought this was just one of those things that was not actually good work. But regardless of that, that is generally when people, like, it makes more sense to take them when you're at the end of your career. But I don't want to get caught up in this. It's weird too, because Manning now, we're so used to Manning, you know, being the guy that just calls all of his own plays and does whatever he wants and so on. It still feels like there's a possibility that if they fall behind in the Super Bowl, it is not, there's a non-zero chance that Brock Osweiler comes in the game.
Yeah. Oh, totally. And I don't, I mean, I also think there's a non-zero chance they just scrap Gary Kubiak's offense and
Peyton just let him go.
Throw from the gun. Yeah, yeah. If they're really far behind. I could see Osweiler coming in. You know, they don't care about the, you know, he can make an extra $2 million if he wins the Super Bowl and he plays 70% of the snaps. They obviously could not care less about that in the scheme of things. Although I just feel like at this point you're so far with Peyton. Like, what do you have to be down to yank Peyton? I mean, does he have to?
Well, maybe you need someone that can throw it more than 30 yards downfield.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I guess that's true. Just to come back. Yeah. No, what if they had a Hail Mary? Do they yank him like relief pitcher style, ninth inning?
I do you want to watch a Peyton Manning Hail Mary?
Like, not unless it's from the 20.
Yeah, exactly. He actually has to be in the red zone. And it still actually counts.
That would be so
sad. At this point, it's still a Hail Mary. But yeah, and we're mocking the guy, and it's funny. I like the little discussion that kind of popped up on Twitter after he ran for that first down yesterday, because everyone was like, "Wow, he's so slow." And then someone, I think Bomani Jones, wisely pointed out, you know, he's still faster than everyone. People calling him slow. All right, I guarantee you, he runs a 40 faster than you do.
It's wild how it works in a vacuum like that. He's an unbelievable athlete right now, and we're mocking him because he can't throw it 35 yards down the field on a road. You know.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I stubbed my toe while doing this podcast, and it's so hard not to cry. Like, it's really, really difficult.
I'm drinking my third beer of the night.
But to me, that is still, this is the defense. What about Kubiak? Like, it feels, I have to say, I was not necessarily like blown away by that hire. Like, it made a certain amount of sense, but it didn't really feel like, oh, well, this is the guy that's going to do the job that John Fox couldn't.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just Kubiak was there when Elway won. Mm-hmm. That's why I never understood. And I don't think we'll ever understand, you know, unless I didn't understand why they would want to bring in Kubiak to do what he did with Manning. It's entirely possible that John Elway wanted to get rid of Peyton Manning. It just wasn't an actionable move to make because he's Peyton Manning and he didn't fit with Kubiak's offense. You know, I think that Elway does look at Kubiak and say, I mean, I don't know. It's like, I think Elway looks at Kubiak and says, I know this worked when I won. So that's what we need to do, and it's hard to argue with the results because they are in the Super Bowl. It feels a little bit like somebody bragging about like teaching your kid how to study for the SATs because you made like a 1320 as a junior. Right. You're like, hey, trust me.
Yeah, I got this kid. Yeah,
right. Like Al Bundy telling his kids like this is how you throw the football. Like Bud, I put up four touchdowns for Polk High. I can't believe I called that from memory, but yeah, I mean something like that. But it's worked out, and you know, he's right. Even with the running game not working, I just think that their defense is so freaking good. The difference though, in what they have defensively against the Patriots, who have literally no running game. And I mean, they have no, Tom Brady was their leading rusher at one point. And want to spread it out and play Von Miller and Derek Wolfe and DeMarcus Ware straight up and blocking. And what they're going to get with the Panthers, who crowd the line of scrimmage and go max protect. Most of the time, and let Cam sit in the pocket and develop the offense that way. I think that's a fascinating shift in gears from going from the Patriots and game planning against McDaniels and Brady to game planning against, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but Mike Shula and Cam Newton.
Okay, well, we'll call that a transition to the.
No, and I'm not trying to get on the Panthers Cardinals. I keep coming back to the difference in offense.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. You're right. But it's probably time because I've avoided it as long as I can, and it's probably time. You wrote a good piece, I thought. You always write a good piece, but I did very much like your kind of game piece. On kind of how long this has been in coming together for Carolina and how long you related to collard greens and how much time it takes to cook those. I have not been in Athens, Georgia long enough to have any idea how long that actual takes. If you can't put it.
Do you like collards?
Not really. Okay. I don't really like vegetables as a general rule.
Oh, no, I mean, I think cheese should be a vegetable, so I'm with you, too. Yeah. But collards, I'm a big collard. I always make collards on New Year's Day.
That's a good thing.
But I mean, like, you know, it's good for money. I mean, it hadn't worked out, but supposedly it's good for money. But you can, you can flash fry them, you can soak them, but I mean, the traditional way is to let them boil and let them simmer for a long time and like maximize the pork and onion flavor and everything you got in there. And it was a very just an apt analogy and for what the Panthers have done. It's almost a slow play, and it's funny to me because it's like a sleight of hand. Everybody's so caught up in screaming angrily about whether Cam Newton is a showboater that they didn't notice what the Panthers managed to build. And then they kind of sprung it on the league. And I guess finally now everybody is buying in. I'm not even sure that everybody believes now.
I don't know, man. I've after that loss, I tweeted that I was obviously disappointed by my Cardinals losing. But it was a great year. I mean, this is without question the best Arizona Cardinals team ever, including the Chicago and St. Louis versions. Regardless of the fact they didn't make the Super Bowl like the other one, clearly this was the best team they've ever had. And
yeah,
it was a very entertaining year, and I was very happy about it all. And at this point, you know, hey, I'm rooting for Cam. And the number of people went back, that showboat, that
it's
no
crazy.
Class. I have to say, it makes me feel like I'm not paying close attention. I feel like it's like they're playing a joke on me. I don't get. I honestly don't understand. Like I'm baffled by it. I honestly don't.
You mean by the people who are upset with Cam?
Yes. Like I honestly don't understand it. Like I'm not trying to say like I'm better than these people. I get Cam in a way they don't. I mean, I honestly don't understand it.
It is the degree to which you dislike Cam Newton is relative to the degree to which you are subconsciously or consciously racist. And or just an Alabama fan. And now the Alabama fan part is, and maybe there's some crossover here, but the Alabama fan thing is excusable.
Yes.
Because you know, you just don't like Cam Newton because he won a national title for Auburn, and gosh darn it, you hate Auburn. And I'm okay with that. You know, that's SEC football. I really think that, like, I mean, there's a lady that writes a letter to the Charlotte Observer that is irate over Cam Newton fathering a child out of wedlock and think he provides a bad example. I guarantee you that same lady thinks Tom Brady is just the epitome of wonderfulness in America. You know, I mean, it's crazy.
It is. I guess. And it's, you know, when you add, you know, here in Athens, by the way, he's just known as the guy that Rick recruited as a tight end. So that's
just another reason Mark Rick got fired.
Exactly. But to me, you know, you're right. Another thing I liked about your piece was the idea of this distraction, and that he has become such this polarizing thing for reasons that I don't really get. That it has distracted from just how well the team has put together, but how much he has actually progressed in that time. You know, people it's kind of forgotten. You know, I still have flashbacks from Ryan Lindley in that game in the playoffs last year.
Sure.
But people kind of forget how bad Newton played in that game. Like, yep. Newton was terrible in that game. And I think if the Cardinals would have gotten any halfway decent quarterbacking or someone that at least – like, I assume that at this point Ryan Lindley is like, oh, I'm left-handed. Oops.
No, he threw that touchdown pass for –
Oh, I know, in the last game of the season. Right. I know.
But I agree. I think if Drew Stanton had played for the Cardinals that day, then the Cardinals might have pulled off an upset.
And then we're talking all year about Cam in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And that becomes and it becomes even more intensified. But as someone that watched the team so much this year, I mean, obviously he's always been this athletic talent, but what's he doing specifically so different that's elevated him to this new level this year?
Yeah, so there are a couple of things. One, and this has started over the past few years, but I mean, it is not. His footwork and his throwing, his throwing mechanics, really. He can make any throw anywhere on the field. Like he can probably throw it 70 yards on a rope, just without even winding up. But his, you see him adjusting his arm slot, and you see the way that he changes and manipulates, you know, maybe where he wants to go with the football. So I think his accuracy, his last 10 games hitting 66.3% of his passes. And it's not like he's running in some short yardage, you know, spread offense here. And then I think Jenny Vrintas of the MMQB had a really good piece following the Monday game against the Colts, Monday night game against the Colts, where, and I just don't think it was public at the point, but she talked to Mike Shula, and he pointed out that Cam is calling 70% of the plays at the line of scrimmage. And so we have this idea that Cam is just this unbelievable athletic athletic specimen and unbelievable physical specimen who is just able to, you know, usually physical specimens overpower everybody else on the athletic field with their physical ability. And Cam can do that, and he showed it on Sunday, but he's also, and this is, I think, that people don't know or don't see, he works his butt off, and it's hard, like Robert Griffin III, everybody talks about it. The one thing he hadn't done really well is dive into the film study and try to become a better quarterback. I think Cam Newton has a major advantage in that there's been a ton of consistency. And the other thing too, you know, if you talk to NFL players, the rookie year is always a treading water situation where you don't really grow that much. So Cam is in his fourth year, you know, probably trying to grow as a quarterback, you know, really grow and develop. And I think it might really be the third year because of Ron Rivera called last year a lost season after his early injuries and then his car wreck. You know, the Panthers made the playoffs and won the game, but they weren't a great team all year. And I think so he's really actually kind of matured into a full quarterback who plays in the NFL, and he's happened to become comfortable at what he does, and he's gotten, you know, he does work off the field, he enjoys what he's doing, you know, he loves where he is, and he's gotten comfortable with the media too, and I think you can just kind of see this like full maturation of him as a player and a person.
Yeah, and another interesting thing about his game, there's this notion, obviously he can run, but they don't really call a lot of run plays for him.
Right.
Like, it's not like that they, like, that's sort of big, like, he can do it, and certainly he can find opportunities. But that time where he was this Vic type character, like, now he basically stays his progressions until there's nobody there, and then he runs like a normal quarterback.
Right. And, I mean, it's true. It's, and the difference is that he's a, like, he had one, he didn't have a single game over 15 rushing attempts this season. He only had one, two, I should have counted this before. Sorry. It looks like eight games this season where he had over 10 rushing attempts, including the two in the playoffs, but he's not like they're not dependent on his rushing attempts to get big yardage, you know?
And also part of it too was, I think one of the things we've noticed found in the playoffs, the way the Arizona Cardinals covered, like, oh, Carson Palmer loses his mind in the playoffs.
Well, I don't want to. No, I'll ask you about Carson Palmer.
No, let's get it out of the way.
Well, no, I mean, I'm curious. Do you think that this, because Bruce Arians didn't pull any punches? I mean, he's like, it ain't his damn finger.
It's not his finger. It's like that Green Bay game. He was perfect in that game.
He was the first one,
the playoff game. The first one, which was the week after the dislocation.
That's right.
Against the Eagles. He was beautiful that game. It was as good of a game he's had all year. Everything was exactly where he wanted to be. And more to the point, he was making good decisions, which is what has happened every time Palmer's been good this year, which has been all year. He's made good decisions. They had a week where the finger just didn't hurt.
That's just not how it works.
Exactly. So it's bizarre to me. And they've both been, like, from the beginning, it's not the finger. It's not the finger. From the absolute first go. And he was, like, honestly, that Packers game may have been his best game all year. And
The one in week 16.
Yes, which was the week after the Eagles injury.
It was at that point that everybody's like, oh my God, the Cardinals are going to destroy people.
Are awesome, exactly. I mean, yeah. they've been good all year. But, you know, as a fan, I was worried going into the end of the year because that was when their schedule finally got tougher. They had Seattle. They had it was really started with that Seattle road game, which they won on Sunday night. And after that, they just kept winning. And that Green Bay game was the culmination because not only was Palmer great, but they were getting their pass rush was
sacked. They sacked Rodgers like seven times,
which had been the weakness pretty much all year. Yeah, sure. And also David Johnson had kind of stepped forward in a way that showed that he could actually be the best of all of those backs. So it was very exciting. But the one thing the Cardinals fans just didn't count on was Palmer. I mean, it's really
pooping his pants in the playoffs.
I wrote about this for Sports Note this morning because I really generally don't like it when people are like, he's a choker.
Right.
These are some incredible athletes work at the absolute pinnacle of human achievement. And most of the time when one person loses, it's because they came up to someone that's just as dedicated and just as talented and just as great as they are. It just went one way rather than the other. They did not choke. To get to the level that you have to get at in this, in not just football, but in any major sport, the level of concentration and focus that you have to have, you know, this is why this is the argument against clutch hitting. Right. In baseball, the idea, like, to get there requires such focus that it's ridiculous to think that, oh, I got scared right now, except for apparently Carson Palmer. Because I've just, that's why it's not the finger. Maybe the finger hurts. I'm not inside his brain. If I were inside his brain, I would be running around because there's apparently a lot of room after the last couple of days. Because he's been so good all year, and throwing into triple coverage and off his back foot and these it was just an amazing thing that you hoped was the Packers, the playoff Packers game, where he hadn't got a playoff win yet, and it was going to happen, and then he was worse in Carolina. It was going to be hard for Arizona to win that game anyway, the way Carolina's playing and the way they're all kind of running. But man, like, we combined Palmer's mistakes with Peterson's fumble, which I really think changed the whole game, the direction of the whole game anyway. Because when Peterson fumbled that ball, like, things were starting to move. I think Arizona had shut down Carolina on three straight possessions, and they were starting to get some momentum. And then they had the field position that was coming together, and then he fumbles, and then Palmer.
Well, then he got the pick, and
then
it
he
was
got
like,
the pick. He made up for it, and then
then Palmer threw the interception in the end zone because Ted Ginn made that incredible tackle on Peterson after the pick.
Yeah, on the first play, and that to me that was, again, your finger doesn't make you throw that terrible pass. Not only is that a terrible pass, it's a terrible pass on first down.
When they came out. All right, let's say hypothetically I had bet $50 on the Cardinals and the Panthers to cover 3.5. I'm just hypothetically. And after that first pass from Carson Palmer sailed, and then you saw the John Brown pass sail too, I would have thrown everything I owned on the Panthers at that point, because I thought that Carson Palmer, after how badly he played in Green Bay, getting that, I agree with you. I think it's stupid, the idea that the clutchiness thing, but I do think
something happened.
I do think there is the pressure to win that first game. In the playoffs, especially at his age, you know, I mean, you have a sense of mortality and all, you know, I mean, stuff is in your head. I mean, like, I know what gets in my head during the day. I can imagine. I mean, you know, he's got a lot weightier issues. And I just think that I thought he was going to bounce back from that Green Bay game. And I thought that the Cardinals were going to come out and say, you know what, we played like crap. We were tight in that game, and they looked tight. They said afterwards they were tight, and that they were going to come into Carolina and be loose and understand that they, you know, kind of gotten a second chance and survived that Packers game. And as soon as he started sailing those balls early, he's like, oh my God, he's tight again. Yeah. And if they can't slow down Carolina, it's over.
Yeah, and that was what happened, you know. And to me, that is. I understood why Carolina was favored coming into that game. I think most people thought it was going to be close. I think most people would have thought that would actually be closer than the first game. And that didn't turn out that way at all. Did you come away from this game feeling, regardless, other than the fact that Carson Palmer and his brain fall out of his head and he freaks out, did you come away as someone that's watched Carolina a lot that they were even a better team than you thought, or did they take advantage of an Arizona team that was kind of off?
No, I think, I mean, to me, watching that game, it was – I have misunderestimated the Panthers again. Yeah. And I just think they are that good. And I think, like, part of the problem too, when you look at I asked Trey Boston after the game about, and I think that quote was in there, but I asked him, I was like, because I was trying to get him to dogpile on Palmer, you know, I was trying to get him to be like, yeah, we knew we were in his head or something like that. You know, I was just curious, like, if they, at one point they're on the sideline and they're like, oh, we got this guy. I was like, so, you know, did you guys figure out that Carson wasn't on his A game? And he took umbrage at the idea that it was anything to do with Carson Palmer and not the Panthers. I think that they are, to me, the two teams best built for the long term that nobody expected to see coming. And if I was picking two GMs right now to run my team, it would be Dave Gettleman and Steve Keim.
Yeah.
I just think that what they've done in terms of, you know, you look at Gettleman and he's built these big bodies on the interior on the defensive line. And even when you have the injuries in the secondary, you know, Ben Wickery went down, Peanut Tillman went down, Roman Harper leaves the game. They've still got these players like Kawan Short and Star Lotulelei that disrupt on the interior. And it just has this trickle down effect where it makes life easier for the ends. It makes life easier for Luke Kuechly pursuing tackles. And it means that the corners don't have to cover very long. And that was the difference, I thought, along with, you know, Palmer being inaccurate, you know, if he's not on his A game, they're not going to beat the Panthers playing that well. So I think that's why I love the Panthers against the Broncos, not to, I mean, I'll be saying it all week. Cause I just think that people are like, well, you know, maybe there's some Peyton Manning factor. I imagine the Panthers are 15-1 or 17 yeah. 17-1 at this point. They blasted everybody.
Yeah.
They've looked great all season. And we're trying to figure out a way why they aren't the best team in football. And they just beat Seattle and they beat Arizona really handily. And I think that Seattle and Arizona are both really good teams. I think for poor phrasing, I think that the Cardinals ran into a buzzsaw.
I'm sorry. Okay. Thank you.
I'm a horrible person.
That's, I had that coming. So yeah, it's funny.
And I like the Cardinals too, because yeah. I think Bruce Arians is probably my favorite coach in the NFL. Because of the way he handles business. And I think their offense is fantastic. David Johnson is a delight to watch. Tyrann Mathieu, when he'll be back healthy, is just a dynamic player. Pat Pease. I argue that the Panthers should take Pat Pease over Cam Newton back in 2011, just because they could maybe steal Andrew Luck the next year. But I just think it was Carolina's on right now. And I think they're going to roll the Broncos.
When you look at, it's funny because these are the number one seeds.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel that way, right? Like, like last year it felt like, okay, well, these are the best two teams. When you got Seahawks, Patriots, it really felt like these are the best two teams that are playing. Like these are the teams. It makes sense that they're in the Super Bowl. And it feels like we've slept on both of these teams so much. Like, you're right. It's weird. You take a step back, you're like, wait, the Panthers have just hammered everyone all year.
Yeah.
Like, of course they should be in this game. And of course they should be favored. And the Broncos have the best defense and all this other stuff. In retrospect, now, because it took me a while to warm up to this matchup, you know, I think I saw you, and I think a lot of people did the ranking of potential matchups heading into the championship.
Yeah, I think this is the last one.
This was the last one. Everybody had this one last. And now that I look at it, I'm like, wait, no, this is probably the best two teams really, really playing. When you take a step back from it, we've just been distracted by other stuff.
And by the way, this is now three straight years that we've had the two number one seeds make it to the Super Bowl. And after a crazy run of like wild cards, you know, like the Giants and the Packers did it, and the Ravens were not a top seed. It's three straight years where chalk is held in the bracket in the NFL, which is, I mean, I guess surprising, but yeah, Carolina, I mean, Denver is a little concerned. I think the one thing that I worry about with Denver, and this is why I rank those matchups, is I think with New England, you were going to get a good game against the Cardinals or the Panthers. I don't think that Arizona or Carolina were going to blow out the Patriots. I think there is some concern about the Broncos getting blown out, because I don't, like you said with Osweiler, I don't know if they can play from behind.
Yeah, I think that is the problem. I'll put it this way, if Carolina comes out to the lead, anything even close to the lead they've had the last 2 weeks, they're going to have this game shut off. People are going to be waiting for Colbert through the second quarter. So
Coldplay.
Is it Beyonce like showing up or something?
I've been hawking this theory for like five or six years, ever since Beyonce's last Super Bowl. At what point is Jay-Z going to come out? I mean, it has to be Super Bowl 50, right? He's played with Coldplay before.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I guess it makes sense. That totally makes sense.
I mean, Jay-Z, show up, dude. Like, yeah. It's your wife playing on the greatest stage. Show
it's
up.
Super Bowl 50. It's Super Bowl 50. And your prediction, I think, is pretty clear here, and we're still 2 weeks away, so I don't think we need to bore down too far into it. But I have to say
let me ask you this. I kind of want to throw out something. I don't want to be obnoxious if I throw it out. Like if I write down a prediction and it's like 44-15. I mean, is that obnoxious to do that if I think that's what's going to happen? I mean,
No, that's not obnoxious. Do you think this might be a blowout?
I feel like it's got blowout potential.
Yeah, it feels like it's got a little bit of Seattle Denver to it.
Yeah, I mean, if similar teams.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Seattle and Carolina, I mean, what is it? Michael Bennett said it previously. They, you know, built the same way. And that's bad news for Peyton Manning when he's not as good now.
Yeah, not as good as he was 2 years ago. I mean, like, he has roughly an eighth as many touchdown passes this year as he did that year.
Do you know how many days he went between home touchdown passes this year?
Yeah,
and 113.
Weren't they all to Daniels?
Yeah, there's only had two of them. It's insane.
So, but that's the thing is, there still feels this part. We're already still getting distracted by it. This still feels like Peyton Manning's last stand Super Bowl, when it feels like he is probably, if he's a pivotal player in this game, it's because the Broncos got drilled.
Yeah. I think that's probably, is there any reason for him to do a Ray Lewis and come out and say, this is my final game?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe he wants, listen, it's clearly his last game with Denver, but
yeah,
I don't know, man. If he goes to, if he's like, yeah, I'm Cleveland. Feeling better. Yeah. Cleveland. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, if he really wants to come back, someone will pick him up.
I mean, but he could farve it and just say, this is my last game and hope everybody plays really hard for him.
Yeah. Or he could like, or he could always do a Roger Clemens and like that's, wait until like halfway through the year and see right. who needs something.
He should have done that this year.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But except then, yeah. But by then Osweiler would have clearly taken control of the job and never let it go. All right. Well, I'm not quite in prediction mode yet because mainly because you've completely convinced me that
yeah, I mean,
Carolina is going to wipe them out.
You saw the game. I mean, yeah. I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I just I get mad at myself. I've done this the last 2 years of the Super Bowl is I've kind of gotten to the Super Bowl and convinced myself of I got New England over Seattle. Right. But I talked myself into Denver over Seattle. Yeah. And I was a big Russell Wilson backer from the get go. And I talked myself into that Peyton and Denver would beat Seattle, and I regretted it badly.
But, and immediately.
Right. Immediately. Yeah, it's like as soon as a snap, I was like, oh my God, right. What have I done? What have I done? Like I should have gone with Seattle. So I'm trying to cement in my brain the logic I plan. I don't want to talk myself into something stupid, is what I'm saying.
That reminds me a little bit of actually I was talking about this, you know, I do a dopey little Georgia football podcast with a couple friends of mine down.
That's awesome.
And you know, they're like, of course, I'm the Yankee of the group, as you might suspect.
Sure.
But we were discussing the Falcons.
They like collards.
Yeah. Yes, they do. They do. And they're suspicious of the fact that I write about politics for Bloomberg Politics because they think it's just a secret way for Bloomberg to take away their guns, which is maybe not wrong. But anyway, so we were talking about the Falcons Super Bowl, and people kind of forget like that going to that Super Bowl in maybe a little after the Eugene Robinson thing, that like everyone the Falcons were the hot pick.
Yeah.
The Falcons were the really hot pick going into that game. I remember I was talking to my friend Matt Pitzer, who used to write for USA Today and now is out of the sports writing business because he got a real job. We worked at the Sporting News together at the time, and I remember like 5 minutes before the game, we said, I looked at each other like, oh man, the Falcons are going to get killed, aren't they? What did we spend all this time? Like, just like this realization, like we'd spent 2 weeks being like, oh yeah, the Falcons have got it. This is the everything's set up. It feels that way. It feels like people are going to talk themselves into Denver.
Yes.
Over
exactly.
The next couple of weeks, like people always do.
Because it's 2 weeks of, like, there's two weeks of chatter, and one of these teams is going to come in loose, and one of these teams is going to come in very businesslike, and that businesslike team is going to be the Broncos.
Yeah, right.
And people are going to be like, well, you see how they're approaching this game. They've been here before, clearly know the stage, and then all of a sudden Panthers are going to be up 17-0 in the first quarter.
Yeah, exactly. And then Peyton's going to start throwing deep.
It's over.
And then it will not go well. All right, well, this is exciting. Well, listen, I will see you out there.
Yes, absolutely. We'll have to find some adult beverages out
there.
Well,
it's weird because, you know, this year, unlike this is my fourth or fifth Super Bowl, but more than any of them, you know, this one feels weirdly geographically dislocated.
Yes.
Because Santa Clara is so far away. Are you staying at the media hotel?
I think so, but the traffic is apparently going to be a disaster the entire time.
Exactly. Exactly. So like, and it's that's in San Francisco, and it's a long way with no traffic.
Yes.
So it feels I keep forgetting, like I'm starting to realize that because I'm not going to media day, man. I just can't.
It's media night this year.
Yeah, I know. My heart just can't take it. I say this. I went 1 year and I have not. I'm just like this is the actual opposite of why I like sports enough to write about them professionally.
I mean, I know that you have stuff to do, but I do think that. The first couple of years I went to media day, I was like, this is amazing. And just such a zoo, such a fun zoo. And I think that it's changed a little bit in that the NFL is kind of embracing it more and like trying to pump it up more because I don't think I'm old and crotchety yet, but last year was unbearable.
Yeah, it is. And that's the thing. I don't, listen, it's, I think there's a difference between, because the reason Media Day used to be kind of fun is because you could make fun of those people that were like, who are like, because some people would get very upset that it was a circus.
Yeah, that's right.
They would not like, they would not like the idea that it was a circus. But now, like now it feels like a quote unquote circus. And yes, it's like, oh no, this is not fun at all anymore. This is, it feels like a corporate mandated fun.
It's like your parents showed up at like the party and they're like, all right, well, we're gonna have this party now, but everybody just sit over here and let's be, you know, it's like,
yeah, don't mind us. And yeah, it's like, yeah, we totally, yeah. But of course I'm curious if this year lives up to my tradition at every Super Bowl I go to is across the board is I spend the entire week, by the end of the week, by Saturday, I being around that much, because the thing about the Super Bowl, of course, is it's basically just a big corporate convention.
Right.
It's basically just people hawking terrible crap and the always depressing Goodell press conference and the NFL experience city and just like every, like I by Saturday I'm just like I don't know if I like sports anymore. This has destroyed me.
I usually spend Saturday in my hotel room like not talking to anybody.
Honestly, it's the worst. And then I'm just like, why do I even do this? And I knew this was what I was always afraid that was gonna happen, is I always wanted to write about sports and now I'm afraid if I get too close to it, I won't like any sports anymore. And now by Saturday, I'm convinced that happened. And then the game happens. I'm like, oh right, this is really fun.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm with you 100%. Saturday, and plus, like, you're kind of on a 7-day hangover at like, but yeah, you know, I mean, by the time you get to Saturday, at least like energy wise or maybe drink wise too. And then Sunday, like last year, kind of I think last year probably bought me 5 to 6 years of not being upset with the idea of that week-long circus just because the game was that incredible.
The game was so great. So, but we'll see what happens this year. If this year is like the East Rutherford one, maybe that'll change. But either way,
I would hate to have to soak in a 30-point Panthers win on the field there. That would be terrible.
Yeah, that's true. anyway, so all right. Well, thank you, man. I'll see you out there. We'll have cool icy beverages. But mostly, thanks for coming on, man. I had a great time.
Absolutely.
All right, everyone, make sure to follow Will's work at Will Brinson, WILLBRINSON. Enjoy Twitter while you can. The stock price is collapsing. Eventually, they're just gonna have a printed newspaper as part of their business plan. So enjoy that. Follow him on Twitter. See his work on CBS Sports. He's great. So on. So I'll be back with a Super Bowl episode from California, but now I am off to Iowa to pretend to be a political reporter. So have a great week, everyone, and I'll see you Super Bowl week. Remember to, of course, rate and review us on iTunes. Music is by the Sundogs. This is the podcast. Be safe, everyone. See you next week. Bye.